Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gods and goddesses, to the Golden Age Gurus Podcast, your source for regenerative, entrepreneurial, and eco-friendly global solutions using ancient future strategies that focus on healing ourselves, our community, and the planet. Now, it is truly an honor to introduce your host, Baba John.
Going into my fourth week of law school, and it's a miracle I'm finding the time to do this, but I don't want to stop the train. These podcasts should be getting more sophisticated. Obviously, the first iteration was a lot of health and spirituality, which obviously, while I was in limbo trying to figure out if I got into law school or not, that's pretty much what I was focusing on. I was doing a lot of praying, basically. Seems to have worked. And but I have never stopped the thing that I've been working towards for many years, and that would be designing my own token based on the blockchain Bitcoin technology. Now, I know a lot of people, it's over people's head in some cases not, but, and I'm sorry if I assume that you have the knowledge and don't speak into more basic fundamentals, and there will be time for that, and we'll probably be coming at it from legal standpoints a lot of the time. So I'm really excited that I chose this path of lawyering, and I'm blown away. I'm learning how to think different. I'm reading all day cases and analyzing the cases and learning the law better, which apparently the lawyers now are going to be creating the law for the next 100 years. So this stuff is organic. It can be changed. It's not like the Constitution, which is kind of set in stone. The statutes are more organic. So, you know, my intention is to help out with this currency design and decentralized organizations, new kinds of organizations. I want to help America create a hospitable environment for entrepreneurs that are doing the right thing and not running our innovation overseas and yada yada. So that's my preface. Be looking for more sophisticated podcasting coming from this direction. So now that I've gotten my feet wet and training wheels are off, the podcast is starting to trickle in some money from advertisements, and sorry, they're not super professional, but I'm sure as this progresses, things will get more polished and tweaked. And thank you so much for listening. It is my pleasure to bring you Farinanda, who I first heard speak at Tribalize in Tulum, and then Emerge in Austin. I saw her again, and she's definitely one of my favorite speakers that I heard at these events, and she's coming at things from a regenerative place. She's coming at it from an indigenous place. She's from Mexico, as far as I understand, and she also worked with some pretty well-known currency designers. And so we're going to be talking about designing currency. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce Farinanda.
Hello,
This show is brought to you on Patreon, where creators are supported by their tribe. For the cost of a latte, you can support the show and my advocacy around fringe legal topics ranging from zero waste in Bitcoin to matters of spirit. I'm committed to serving mankind by providing thousands of years of ancestral wisdom. Learn from my gurus, join my network, and get exclusive content. We have a free tier so you don't have to worry about money, a support tier for just a few bucks, and an apprentice level for aspiring Jedi interested in my mystery school and nature-based ministry. We have a VIP business tier for CEOs who want their own wizard. Just remember, King Arthur had a Merlin and Queen Elizabeth had her John Dee. Historically, I've charged way more as a consultant, but while I wrap my last year of law school, I'm willing to help just to get this new platform going. You'll have access to me with the Voxer app and get access to the Advocacy Launchpad and Discord. Sponsorship is sold separate. If you're interested, message and visit patreon.com, patreon.com/Golden Age Gurus. Follow for free and support if you can.
Hi, love. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to connect with you.
Yes.
I'm trying not to create more podcast trauma, so hopefully. Fernanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Baba John. It's such a good thing to be here with you.
So what have you been up to? What adventures are you having these days since I saw you at Emerge?
Well, you know, the adventures that I'm being in right now is what I'm trying to birth is the I want that currency design becomes a discipline of study. And Arthur Brock and I have been working really hard to make that happen through a strategy that has three different layers to it that I would love to share with you. And so that's pretty much something that I want to see happen before 22 comes to an end and into the beginning of 2023. So that's most what I've been focusing my working energy in.
So Arthur Brock is founder of Holochain, correct?
Yes. Arthur Brock is, and Eric Harris Brown are the founders of Holochain. And him and Eric and I and another person named Jean-François Nouvel started the Metacurrency Project a long time ago. And Metacurrency Project is kind of the mama of Holochain and Holo, is the mama of them all. It's like the principles and frameworks that we that lead our work, you know, like it's leading systems framework on how life operates. It's about expressive capacity and DNA of new social organisms and what Eric Harris Brown calls grammars and what Arthur and I do around currency design. It's all part of this larger plan that is, or this larger technology stack and set of frameworks and tools and currencies and philosophies and that are really meant towards helping humanity's coordination problem in as one of the central issues.
So when I met you at Tribalize in Mexico, and you were my favorite speaker, and when you talked about, you know, the regenerative, you know, concept combined with the crypto space and all these things, I was like, oh my God, this person is speaking my language and she's speaking it better than I've ever spoken it. You know, like I was just like, it just felt very synchronistic, you know, as far as what you were talking about. So I was hoping you could just tell us a little bit about how you became who you are and what got you into the currency design and then maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the regenerative movement, you know, and yes, how that works with what with currency design.
Oh, that's a lovely path. I like that. Oh, how did I become And how did I come into currency design is some while ago. You know, I was as many people, just like doing my best, working. I was working in e-learning at that time, and I was loving my work, but I was not loving that I was feeling that there's this big conversation happen about, you know, how we create a better world. And I was not part of it. I didn't feel that I was part of it. I feel like I was at the edges of it, but not really contributing to it. And a friend of mine, who was a tribalist, actually, JC Navarrete, and I were like spent hours and hours in the forest, in the woods, learning materials from, you know, the integral world from Ken Wilber. I was always being fascinated with that model of, you know, all quadrants, all levels, and it's a systems thinking model. And, you know, we were studying that. And then through that, we came to this body of work of collective intelligence. And when I saw that, it just struck my spirit. And I was like, I turned to him and I said, that's what I'm going to do. And he's like, yeah, what is it? It sounds cool, but what is it? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to do that. And from then on, I started to learn. My entry point was to process art. So I do a lot of facilitation and design of experiences for people. And I love that, like how to create the magic in the middle, you know, like how we're bigger than the sum of our parts. How do people really collaborate and set agreements? And how is that it happens that suddenly we feel that there is this space in between us that carries all of this wisdom in it that is bigger than any of us. And I was fascinated with it for a while. And you know how the universe works, that once you set your mind into it, I met the right people and I wove myself into the network of people on collective intelligence. And I ended in having this project that was about creating the largest vision in Latin America for an association of accountants, of 15,000 accountants in Mexico. Wow. So suddenly I had the team, I had the money, I had the guru, you know, I had like for collective intelligence, and I was doing that. And you know, life was setting a group of people that were doing events in that time called Evolutionary Salons that were epic. There were three of them. And it's kind of similar to Emerge, you know, like you go and it's about emergence. It's about what is that we can see together. And but it was magically facilitated. It was like from the COINTELLIGENCE Institute, Tom Adley, which is a master facilitator, and all my heroes from collective intelligence were there, you know, Juanita Brown and Barbara Max Hubbard, and, you know, and we just sat in a circle, and then this guy comes and he says, we're not going, any of the work that you're doing is going to work unless we change the monetary system. And it struck me like a lightning. It was like, oh, wow, epiphany moment. And, you know, I have thought about this before, how screwed it was, because my dad was an economist and he happened to do national accounting. So he did economy, you know, he did accounting for countries. And wow. He used to say how broken it all was and how externalities were not existing. And that was just stupid shit and how people were justifying fucking the environment. Sorry for my language, you know, like breaking up the planetary boundaries. And but he didn't have an answer. And I was not planning to go into economy, because I was seeing him standing in front of eternal spreadsheets and just like having all his work. And I thought it was the most boring thing ever. And there it was, you know, it was like, suddenly I was totally immersed in it. I started a relationship with that man, Jean-Francois Nouvel, and we stayed in relationship for 7 years. And in relationship with him, I met with Bernard Luther, the creator of the Euro, become his mentoree for, you know, in terms of, I was like so embedded in the mystery of money and feeling the beauty of the yin currencies that were in the past that was held by matrifocal societies, and feeling like, wow, it's around the values of community and relationship, and you design currencies that want to amplify such behaviors and such values, you can have it. So how come we ended with a matrifocal, a patriarchal supremacy tool? That's how. Oh, we eliminated all the indigenous wisdom, all the feminine in the circle, and we ended up with a one current yang currency to rule them all.
Nice.
So I became passionate about it. That was my entry point.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what's the guy's name that made the euro?
Bernard Lietaerer.
What other currencies has he done? I mean, I've definitely heard of the euro. Has he done other ones?
He started one. He died in 2019. He did a bunch of different currencies. And he was like, Bernard was a very interesting character. So he was, in one way, he was the sacred agent of all of us in the system. He was a dowser. He was a super mystical man, like incredible. And he did a basket of currencies that he would call Terra. He was also like in all major currencies and national currencies, he would have a seat at the table for sure. And when Bitcoin came, he was like definitely one of the guardian angels of many, you know, like doing consulting and advising for different currencies that were out there. And including the central bank currencies, you know, like he was one of the first to put out the light and say, no, guys, this was not inspired by Bitcoin. This would have happened anyways. This has been in the making for decades. You know, so he was a very inspiring voice. I mean, all his materials are out. He wrote The Future of Money, The Mystery of Money, you know, like many, many books. And he was in the Club of Rome. So he was most of the system as you can have in the system, and right, out of the system as you can have out of the system. But he was only like his friends would know his passion for crop circles and, you know.
That sounds like a chip off the old block.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, we definitely took a loss in 2019 when he died.
Well, what an awesome mentor to have. That says a lot for what you're doing. I mean,
well, I was working with Bernard, but I was working also with Michael Linton, who designed mutual credit currencies in that time. Eric Carice Brown, co-founder of Holochain, and I met way before Arthur and I. And Eric and me and Jean-Francois were working in a system called the Flow Place that was to show people how easy it was to create currencies. This is way before Bitcoin, friend. This was 2007, 2006, something like that. We were creating the Flow Place. And as a way of saying, hey, this is as easy as creating a namespace and doing a legal ledger. And before DLTs, of course, you know, the blockchain and holochain and such. And then Jean-Francois and I one day had an epic moment. We went in meditation. We woke up and we said, oh, I know what we need to do. And we need to leave money. We need to stop asking for money. We need to try to leave money for a while and see what happens. So we went into a gift economy. I went into gift economy for over 2 years and stopped asking for money. And just like, not that I didn't use money. I did use money, but I was mostly not asking for money for any of my services and trying to go into what does it feel to go full barter? What does it feel to change contract with people? How does it feel? Like, I even had like this consulting gig with a gold company called Gold Corp. And I went into their you know, interview, and they were like, so everybody earns this much an hour, and how much you want? And I was like, you tell me, just give me. I'm not gonna tell you if it's right or wrong. Just give me. Only that, he didn't really know what to do with me. He didn't know if he should give me like coupons for buying food, or if he should buy me a bicycle, or like if I like if it was a totally alien thing, just to put a price without having me to tell him the amount of money that I wanted. And he, you know, it, what I observed is that it changed the relationship that I had with him versus the all like the relationship he had with everybody else. Because in the moment that you're not asking for money, you change the power dynamics shift. And he didn't like that. But it, you know, so he didn't like that. But it was like, but he coped with it. And he was like for about, you know, 3 months or so working with this company. And so many examples, like we would give services, we would do workshops, we would, you know, so we were stretching ourselves into how do you request cleanly, and how do you, and I started a mutual credit currency in my hometown in Tepoztlán that still exists. It's called Olines. So if you go to Tepoztlán Morelos and you find a sticker in some store that says, se aceptan Olines aquí. That was probably me. That's nah. the currency I started. And I named it Olines because Olin in Nahuatl means flow, which brings me to my current philosophy of currencies, you know, when Arthur's a meta currency. Because then when I met Arthur, it was another epic moment where I understood and went beyond what Bernard Litter was teaching. You know, Bernard was focusing on tradable type of currencies for products and services, and how to solve that, and how to kind of create a different design for national currencies. While Arthur's definition of currencies extends that space, transcends and includes it, and he goes into the full systems integrity and observes life and observes flow and relationship, and then goes and says, you know, this is DNA. You can unlock, because with currencies, you can shift behaviors. Doesn't matter how small a behavior, you will shift a behavior. So if we can shift behavior with currencies, then that means it also extends and goes beyond just dollars or bitcoins or any other tokens. It goes beyond that. It can go into reputation currencies. Reputation currencies were coming out, you know, stronger, and then how you design those in a way that it creates the right behaviors and not the wrong, because the incentives are so important. And so that's how I ended up with meta currency about, I don't know, 15 years ago.
So you went through an ICO a couple of years ago. Was that with MetaCurrency? Was that with HoloChain, wasn't it? Who was that?
So that started with MetaCurrency. MetaCurrency was the one that brought the first money in. And then we started to work on Holo.host and HoloChain parallel. So HoloChain doesn't have a currency. HoloChain is a distributed layer technology. It's a framework for apps, for distributed apps that operates very different than the blockchain. It doesn't run by consensus. It doesn't have proof of work. It doesn't have gas fees. And it doesn't have tokens. You know, when you create something with the blockchain, you need to create a token. That's not true for HoloChain. And so HoloChain for us is like that, an alternative that is doesn't consume that amount of energy and is a decentralized tech, and you can do anything that you can do with the blockchain plus some. And Holo is the financial backbone of the whole of HoloChain, and Common Sending, the company that I run, and MetaCurrency and Coventina Foundation, which are a set of sister companies from the HoloChain ecosystem. There's more, but that are not. You could say they're connected by the financial backbone, because so many of us have used HOT to be able to our to be able to launch our companies. A lot of hot has been moving from the accounts of the main team or the first team that launched the ICO all the way to the present moment. And so in 2018, we said, you know, we really need to do a crypto because this bubble is going to pop and we have to pass for before they regulate it. And so we did. And in 2018, we launched HOT, and we fundraised $27 million, something like that. In that time, like in you know, it took us a year to do it, but a month since we put the click the button to the 27 million, it was like a month. So it was like witnessing that miracle of that moment, right, where all those things were happening, and all that success, or what looked at that immense crowdfunding mechanisms, and that pattern started to happen, the pattern of the ICOs. So we kind of went like, oh, that's a nice pattern. Let's keep funding things with this pattern and let's see what other patterns emerge and let's create more patterns like this so that we can, you know, stop waiting for the venture capitalists to wake up and get us out of the mess we're in, because apparently they don't want to wake up. So let's do it ourselves. And so part of why we do currency design and what is our interest is to be able to keep working on those patterns. Like the ICO pattern for us, it was very different than others. For example, for us, we started with a crowdfunding in Indiegogo that was selling holoports because tech is something that people like, hardware is something that people like. And we wanted to test that narrative. And so once we went like, oh, wow, we fundraised $200,000 in 3 days. And we were like, yeah, people want this. And one thing that we always say when people go for an ICO is we say, don't go for the money, go for the community. And if you get the community, you'll have the money, but go for the community and go for what's best for the community. So one of the things that we did was to put like brakes to whales. So we didn't allow for more than an X amount of money to be invested because we wanted a lot of small investments, more than big whales that then could, you know, control the currency as they wanted, you know, at launch. Now, because it's a speculative ERC token as any other speculative ERC-20 token, then, of course, once it's out in decentralized exchanges, it's prone to whales and whaling behavior. But, you know, the launch was epic. So that was very appreciated by the community that we were actually wanted to do something in benefit of the whole of the community. And that's the way Holo, Hot and Holo.host launched. And then Holochain and Holo are under the same umbrella or were with the same organizations, different teams of people. And at some point, probably early 2023 or somewhere in 2023, it will become the Holochain Foundation and become more like the open source community led kind of foundation that it needs to become, because Holochain is an open source software while Holo.host is a company that if it's successful, which I believe it will become a fully decentralized peer-to-peer hosting network in the future. And Holo sees it this way as like, oh, if all goes well, then we don't need the intermediary in the middle. And so and that would be because we managed to create a decentralized server, a computing power infrastructure for the world.
Wow.
And so Holo.host is its native currency is actually not HOT. HOT, when you design currencies and you want to do something like, I want to raise money, many people do tokens. But then what they don't realize is that because their imagination doesn't go further than money, then our token is going to become the next money of the regenerative society of the world. And, you know, no. Especially if you have to then trade it back for money. How is it that token that you have to counter trade for money is going to become the next money. How exactly is that going to happen? Especially because most people do not understand what money really is. But we do recommend, we do not recommend, but we do see tokens as if people hold them as financial instruments, that then they can transition into more sustainable, regenerative type of currencies like mutual credits. So that's what we're doing. Like HOT is the speculative currency, and later, I hope this year, Holofield is going to be launched with the Holo Network. So Holo Network right now is like about 5,000 servers, they're like decentralized servers all around the world, and it has hosts. So think about it this way: it's like Airbnb doesn't have beds, Uber doesn't have taxis, we don't have, Holo doesn't have servers. It's a decentralized server. It's competing with Amazon web servers, because what we want is to be able to really have people own their data, and us, we the people, own that type of infrastructure, so that we can really be the owners of our stuff, you know, our data, all of it, you know, our health data, information data, behavior data, everything. And so we need it, because otherwise it's very easy to block the you know, pull the plug, including right now with NFTs or any other currencies. You can't pull the plug because they are running in centralized servers.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I hear a lot of my peers a lot talking about Holochain, so I know, even though I don't comprehend fully, I get that Holo is Holo.
But you get some certain things, Baba John, which is sovereignty, right?
Definitely.
Like, we, right, you get sovereignty. And so blockchain goes for trustlessness and approaches. We're going to be approaching trustlessness by not trusting anybody. While Holochain says, no, we just have to go for accountability. There's no sovereignty without accountability.
True that.
If you claim to be a sovereign, you need to be accountable. And you need to be accountable first to self and then to the commons.
Ashe, I'm down with that. And I hate Amazon. yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, just what it represents, right? Like the commodification of very much everything.
Well, I mean, just somebody that works online, and, you know, I write and I monetize my blogs, and I would love to put products into my blog so I could monetize it more. But Amazon and I and YouTube and I just have not gotten along, you know, like what seems to flow is these other systems that we're talking about. Like that flows for me. Like these other systems, you know, I've been using them for 10 years and they just haven't done much for me. You know, they're pay to play. Mm. You know? So if you're not doing certain things, they don't help you. You know, they don't help you get moving. They want you to be moving out the door. So it just hasn't worked for me, like being an affiliate with Amazon. You know, the last time I signed up, I sold some things. You know, they have like a minimum, like, hey, sell 3 things. And so I sold 3 things. And I'm like, let's see if they let me stay. And they didn't. And I was like, I knew it. So I was looking at Alibaba. I was like, maybe I'll just go with the Baba situation and source things through there. So I'm just a guy working on the internet trying to pay my bills and use the internet to do it. And when I have these centralized systems, you know, that I use and give money to all the time, and they're just not that helpful to reciprocating that energy. This is not reciprocated. It's a one-way show.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how we can make the most money out of you. And then give you an illusion that you're doing good. Yeah, I'm with you. And I
hey
Have you ever heard of the book, The Richest Man in Babylon? If not, you can check it out in the bookstore. But it's a classic business book that reveals the key to personal wealth. And it's basically saving 10% every month. So the way I like to save is in gold and silver with Mint Builder. I've been using Mint Builder for years. I've created a system where my savings plan pays for itself by signing up people who want to save and start a silver bank account, which ships physical coin out every month based on their budget. The author of The Richest Man in Babylon says that magic number is 10% of your income. Now you can build your legacy with the best pricing on metal assets while helping the nonprofit Feed My Starving Children, which uses 90% of donations for food to stop malnutrition in over 100 countries around the world. Thank you for considering Mint Builder to build your wealth and feed hungry children. You can go to preciousmetaltrends.com/102026. Complete the form and claim your free silver bullion bar just for taking our short tour and brief survey.
I think that, you know, part of what we're doing, and I think the Web3 space is such a big space right now, and I would want it to see how people can actually receive it as an opportunity to create a way to restore ourselves in our relationship with nature, a way of how we can coordinate and scale, sense make a scale. And it's not only about decentralization, like life is not only decentralization, and there's many things we do not want decentralized, right? We don't want to decentralize nuclear weapons, you know. So there's some things that we need to be able to play with the ebb and flow of life. Like, we wouldn't want only the feminine, we want the masculine as well. So we want the balance of ebb and flow, masculine and feminine, yin and yang. And so the same applies to currencies. You know, you want to have some yang currencies for you know, like, and Bernard Ditters used to say it's like an A, you know, like you don't have an A without just one foot. You need both of them to start to sit grounded. And you need to design other currencies that want to create different sets of behaviors. You know, I have a client that she creates games for women, and she's seeing that instead of secreting adrenaline, people go for oxytocin, and that actually creates bonding and it creates relationship and care. And so there's all these things that we need to be exploring to get ourselves in the act of balancing ourselves, in the act of restoring our relationship with everything, you know, starting with one own, and then to our communities, and then to our bioregion, and then to our nations, and then to our globe, and then to our, and so much work. And so for us, our position is our lever, right? Depends. There's so many levers and so many ways in how to look solving the issues that we have. And our lever is through expressive capacity. Our lever is through DNA for social organisms. And why DNA? Why do we call it DNA? It's not just a nice metaphor. If you see money, and how it shapes behavior, and you see that it's so ingrained in the very fabric of our being, right? Like it's woven into our political systems, it's woven into our legal systems, it's woven into our environmental systems, it's woven everywhere. We don't seem to be able to organize our labor without it.
Well,
you know, it's this vast network, this vast structure. And if you see it that way, then you can see that because of the way it's been designed. So I'm not saying there's no human greed or ambition, but the way that money is designed promotes those behaviors as well. You can have currencies that do not promote hoarding, for example. Mm. You can have currencies that promote flow.
Well, yeah.
They're designed differently.
Well, with the money that we're using, which is based on debt, I mean, I just noticed that it screws up everyone's sense of value, you know? Like, how can you value people or things correctly, like how can you value the planet if the energy exchange is not real and based on debt? You know, it creates a screwed up sense of value. That's my observation.
Yes, it does. It does. You know, it's like this. You could see money like entrenched in it's an economic network, and they're like access tokens to pretty much everything. And that is incredible, because it's like if money quits existing, we still are the ones that produce all the value.
True that.
Money produces nothing. You know, so the problem with tokens out there, and we have seen it with the fall of Luna and the so-called stable coins, yeah, so much for a stable coin, is that they don't have any productive capacity behind them. So what's the point? So what we need is, like, for example, Holofuel, which is the currency for the Holo network. It's the first mutual credit asset-backed currency of the world, backed by computing power. So first, it cannot be regulated in the same way, because it's actually a utility, computing power. And so, you know, as we go and transition from the financial system we're currently at, we need things that are backed by real value, a value that people produce, not an agreement of value like Bitcoin. You know, oh yeah, we agree it's valuable, so just play with it. But really, when you have Bitcoin, yeah, now because we think it's valuable, I would receive Bitcoin for payment, sure. But would you go to the market and buy your carrots with it? It would be silly, you know. You don't even know what the value of the carrot is in any given moment. It's not like it's not even a good unit of measure. So it doesn't do what money does. It can't. Well, it's not built that way.
Well, they say, like, when you're buying something, to use the money that's the least scarce. So I guess Bitcoin, you wouldn't use it because it's rare. You know, more rare than a dollar.
It is more rare than a dollar. That's a really good point. Yeah.
That's just what somebody explained to me. I was like, oh, if I have a dollar, a credit card, and a Bitcoin, what am I going to use? I'm going to use the least scarce value exchange, you know?
Well, Bitcoin is scarce. It has a very limited amount of, it's so funny how people start to create like the Bitcoin thing, because if you were to really like define Bitcoin, what is it? You know, that you can't touch it, you can't smell it, you can't see it. It has like brutal energy, you know, generates, it's like, what is it? It's like numbers in a ledger with a great branding. You know, we like to depict it as coins, but those coins don't exist.
So when you got with Arthur Brock and mapped out these three principles of currency design, what'd you come up with?
The three principles, what I was talking about at the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, this is not principles. We have a lot of principles of currency design. Okay. But what I was talking about is how we're going to launch, because we think it's time to have currency design as a discipline of study, you know, like really, not like, oh, I want a currency, I'll just create a token and then I'm a currency designer. I just launch an NFT and I'm a currency designer. No, there's principles of how this works, actual physics on how this works, you know. So there's one aspect is the token aspect, and the other one is the systems aspect. And people either look at the systems and forget the token, or look at the token and forget the system. And so there's really not a lot of really solid currency designers out there, especially from the let's transcend money and let's transcend just like exchange of products and services and go into, you know, how do we track performance and contribution and care, and how do we, you know, create a true care economy, and how do we solve the transportation problem and the gas problem, and, you know, peak oil problem. And, you know, we can solve so many problems through the design of good currencies. And that's what we are teaching. And so we have a low touch, a medium touch, high touch type of ways. But what we're coming out with is like starting with a self-paced online workshop that we're about a month to launch. We had some gaps in the content that we had to cover, so we're producing those. And I'll send the link so you can share it in the podcast. And there's a beautiful video that explains all about flow and living systems and why currencies matter within this concept and this, you know, way of seeing. And then we're going to start a currency designer guild. So Commons Engine is creating a currency designer guild. So you don't need to be doing your own currency. You just need the wanting to become a person that understands it from the system level, a person that knows how to create DNA for new social organisms and that cares about coordination at scale. And we're going to have different challenges for these currency designers in the guild. And I assume that it will start, but it will not really finish. We want to run it parallel to a cohort of people designing currencies, not necessarily want to become currency designers, but people that have a land project, a community project, or a commons that they want to be able to manage or steward. And so we'll be creating a cohort of people that not necessarily will become currency designers, but they do want to launch their currencies. And through that, they will learn the practices of currency design and some of the frameworks, because, you know, they all need help. And we just have to, as Common Thinking and Meta Currency, we don't have sufficient capacity to tend them all. So let's do it together. Let's learn together. And so the Currency Designer Guild and the cohort of land-based community and commons projects are going to run parallel. They will start the self-paced workshop at the same time. But the difference is that if you go through learningmetacurrency.org, you'll be able to go to the Udemy, do the self-paced course by your own. And there will be videos and quizzes, and you'll get a sense of what that is. And you can do that by your own. So it's very low touch, very low involvement. Then if you want more involvement, then you can go to one of the cohorts or the guild, but it has a membrane, right? You will go to the Currency Designer Guild if you want to become a currency designer. Otherwise, no point. It's like going to engineering with not wanting to be an engineer. You know, you don't do that. So that would be the membrane. And the membrane for the cohort is going to be, you do have a land. You do have a community project. You do want to be able to solve a particular problem with currencies. And you want to do it in a cohort format. Even if you're starting and don't have clarity on what kind of currencies, or your community is not that big, because we're going to focus on a success story of one community that is doing both businesses and launching interesting projects and things, and focus on their currency design as a way to organize itself around it. And then we'll have hot seats where people will be able to share when they're ready with a currency, and then we'll be able to identify gaps and kind of run them through a hot seat, you know, like, oh, this. And then we'll have live sessions with experts, like we did one about evolution of governance and DAOs, and we'll continue to do panels and sessions with experts of all sorts of topics, because we're very, very well connected in that network. And so that's kind of the vision that we have. And then the cohort will finish. And then from there, other projects may spawn. Maybe we'll find a meta project of things that we want to do in between all the communities. You know, I don't know. Creativity at play, right? We want to hold the collective intelligence field so that people can really become highly creative and well held. And then the Currency Designer Guild will keep going through challenges of different sorts, like we want to do with Indy Johar, we want to do a care economy challenge. We have another group of people that want to do impact and dashboards, and that they want to bring that as a challenge. There's different ones. So we will keep playing with the idea that the currency designer guild keeps advancing. And then hopefully we can get to have clients together and form a true guild, you know, where we support people, people feel supported. I also want to work on the inner aspect of money. Like, I want to be able to create experiences of working with our shadows and the shadow of money. So it's not only external and mental, but, you know, there's different paradigms that you need to shift in your own consciousness, in your own mind, to really truly become a currency designer, or else you won't get it. So it's like blueprint. So there will be many blue pill, red pill moments, and there would be some moments of crying out for capitalism and just like being the doulas of capitalism. Let's kill the motherfucker. Oh, wow. You know? Yes.
The doulas of capitalism. Yep. There you go.
Yeah. So that's what's coming, friend. And so right now, you know, we're advancing with that. We recently presented the Currency Designer Guild for a grant, because we do need some flow to financial capital to be able to make this happen. And but we keep advancing, and the self-paced workshop is going to launch soon. So I'm hoping to launch this three things, the self-paced in a month, and then the cohort, the guild would be, and the cohort would probably be announced by end of September. And that's where we're at. Where are you playing with me?
Well, I'm really interested in helping that group we met with in Austin, the All Win Capital. I was talking to them about the utility cohort, I guess, with Holochain. Sounds like this is the same conversation, designing, you know, the waste factor, basing, you know, a model on these streams that we're throwing in holes instead of reusing properly. So I wrote a white paper about a zero waste protocol. It's on the website, and Alwyn saw it, and they invited me to participate with that. And I know you invited me also to the cohort. So I want to help with the waste stuff, you know, figuring out that new system for the waste utilities. And I have a lot of those pieces. So I'm actually starting law school in the morning in Houston. So I'm headed towards the legal engineering aspect of all this stuff. So, you know, that's where I'm at.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah, playing with the waste currencies is definitely one challenge that the Currency Designer Guild would love to look at, right? It's like it's such a anything that has to do with our major systems and how we operate on Earth, and waste is one big huge one, and a really interesting one, actually.
Well, you know, if you ask me, it's got the most economics out of all the
right
out of all the, you know, plays that I've seen with this stuff. Like, to me, the waste stream, it's broken into 12 market categories, and those 12 categories already have a value, you know, and it's already got a market for the commodities, you know. So seems like, you know, there's money there. It's like green with the money, you know, versus spending more to go green. It's like you go zero waste. General Motors adopted zero waste and they saved $3 billion.
Uh-huh.
At all.
Yeah, it has an incredible economics. I introduced Nick Rotondo to a friend of mine in Mexico that managed the waste of Mexico City. And I don't know where their conversations are, but they were starting something together pretty quick because it was such low-hanging fruits. And he was telling us about how they managed the waste in Vienna. And I was pretty impressed how they manage the waste, how they clean the plastics, and then how they use that energy to heat the houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, incredible, 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 because now we have the technologies, right, to separate plastics, that to convert them into something else. It's just a matter of, you know, mobilizing. Well, not just, but, you know, it really, we can. It's just astounding to me. Like, we truly can, but we have, like, this huge coordination problem. So maybe we'll do a live session. One of the live sessions or topics could be waste, because, I mean, it just feels like a challenge in itself, you know.
Yeah.
It could be both, like, you know, you represent that stream in the cohort, but then, you know, as your own, you know, designing for this, and that begins it, and then it may take off as a little, because I'm seeing that part of what could happen is that then little groups get together, you know, like little groups get together, mm-hmm. that then we get to work with them as common saying or meta currency in a way that, oh, now we're looking at this. Oh, wow, two people are working on that, or one is very focused and is really going far. Because part of what we want as common sense and meta currency is to extend our capacity. And so it's incredible. I have other friends that are working on similar things. So really interesting, Baba John. I'm so happy that you're holding that.
Well, what you gotta watch out for, according to the zero waste people that, you know, the elders that taught me, is, you know, there's going to be an attempt to burn the trash and turn it into fuel. And I'm kind of agnostic with that, because there are uh-huh. applications, but there's large organizations that will give the project bad PR if they're trying to make, you know, the oil economy out of the trash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
like the best thing to do with it is to reuse it, not to burn it. And so, you know, like when we were in Tulum, you saw pet gas there, and I'm like, man, the gas prices are so high, this is perfect. Like, let's just put a gas pump on my land and forget zero waste. Just, like, let's burn all the plastic and turn it into gas. Like, that's very it sounds like a good idea, but at the same time, I know what a negative PR move that is. Like, if somebody wanted to hurt the people that are doing that, that think they're doing good, they might get a kick in the pants, and I've gotten that kick before. Let me just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so you just got to watch out for that, because zero waste is no burn, no bury philosophy. So it's like designing without the burning, you know. And they'll be like, oh, it's pyrolysis, this isn't burning, it's pyrolysis. It's like, well, pyro's in the word.
You know, like, right.
But anyway, so I'm kind of agnostic about it. I just know it's kind of a no-no if we're gonna do zero waste, you know.
And what is behind it? I mean, these tools that, like, there's technology that claim that they could just transform it, and that it, would it be like polluting to environment? Why is the no about?
Well, like, if you look at like a city like San Francisco, I think San Francisco is like 96% zero waste now. You know, and that's where my teachers are in California. So they did it there. They've done it all over the world. There are companies and there are cities that have shown the model of how to do it. And there's all kinds of ways to handle the different streams. Depends on what stream you want to handle. Like, if you want to talk about plastic, we can talk about that. But that's usually what, like, pet gas is probably going to be using plastic, right? But we could be melting it and extruding it and making, you know, park benches or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of things you can make without burning it. But the model, nature is the model. And
yeah, nature is the model. Does burning always, with all the different technologies, create like a side effect, or?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's definitely causes a lot of, you know, harmful gas and carbon emissions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that the design principle is no burn, no bury, and
yeah,
So sometimes you'll have the young people like, hey, let's create gas out of this. And I'm just saying that's already been established that that's like a no-no. So Mexico City is heating stuff. They're probably burning the trash. So they're not zero waste. They're doing something that's better than nothing.
But well, the thing is that the sad story about Mexico City is that, you know, like when Pablo was there and before López Obrador, they had like this incredible composting facility. And they had already produced tons and tons, millions of tons of really good soil.
Nice.
And López Obrador decided to close it.
Oh, my God.
Because they wanted to give the gig to someone else. And so they closed that, and now those tons and tons of beautiful soil is now waste.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they closed that, and there was, like, beautiful people working there. They really had it to the science of composting, like, really incredible. Cool. And there's a certain, like, sophistication, and my friend Pablo, he bought, like, this $50 million plastic separation facility that he bought for $50 million because it was, like, he bought it as pretty much as just metal. Because the city of Vienna had it, and they used it, like they literally installed it, used it for a month, and then they had something different and new they were excited about. And because it was government money, they couldn't just sell it, but as metal. And he happened to be there, so he bought it.
Mm.
And he hasn't been able to use it. It's in Vienna. Because then the government changed and he had no way to use it for Mexico City. Mm-hmm. So he's going to bring it and use it probably for the south of Mexico. That's what's taking shape right now. And what it does is just separates really efficiently, you know, so that then, you know, with that separation, you can know what to do and how to upcycle it, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if we're talking about just bare bones design, you know, if you take the organics out of the waste stream, usually you're cutting the trash in half. So that's like the biggest and the most powerful, the most impact. So where we start is just trying to incentivize composting, you know, like a dirt coin. And that would be like out of the 12 market category, that's like the strongest, most powerful one. You cut the trash right in half just with that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's a great design. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're running out of time, but now we have a goal. We definitely want to have a cohort in the cohort, something around waste as part of the commons. So I love it. Thank you.
So where can people look you up or find you or
yeah, you know, I'm on Twitter as Fer Ananda, F-E-R dash, but lower dash, Ananda, or I'm in TikTok as the medial woman. In TikTok, I'm starting to share more about who I am and more about intentional communities and more about, you know, like, a medial woman is a woman that lives in between worlds. So as we go and live into the liminal, we create new systems, new ways of being. As we ask ourselves, who are we and who are we transforming to? Then that's the guidance that I, you know, want to be able to provide. And I don't do that through Twitter. So Twitter is most my currency work. And, you know, it's my oldest account. So I focus a lot on that. And I'm in Instagram and in Facebook, but my Facebook is kind of more like an echo chamber of my Instagram. And my Instagram is more like my nature pictures and things like that. So for people that really want to find my work, it would be like either through TikTok or through Twitter. I'm also in LinkedIn, so you can find me in LinkedIn. I have a new link. I have a, it's easy. Let me see if I can pull it out because I had a problem with my...
Well, you can send me a list of what links you want me to put in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I actually just have one. It's called the bio link. And it's just that I just have to find it. And I'll send it to you because there's everything of my work there. And actually a TEDx that I did on money, it's also there. And that's a great way to find me.
Okay. Well, I love what you're doing. I'm so blessed to have you in my network. And thank you for joining me on this podcast. And
yes, thank you so much. And I look forward to listening.
Well, okay, I hope you enjoyed Farinanda. I put some links in the show notes. Basically, she has a currency design course on Udemy for about $200. I put the link for the learningmetacurrency.org at the end of the links in the show notes, and also check out Commons Engine, creating living economies for thrivability, and Holochain. Also, their tag is because the world needs an upgrade, which I'm sure you would agree. So we're doing the work. Support Farinanda. Follow her on YouTube and. In her bio link, you also find Spotify podcast she did with Arthur Brock, who was part of Holochain. So there's materials in there. I also put, I videoed her speaking at Tribalize, and she blew my mind. So you can take a little snippet of that and see why I'm such a fan. So yeah, like, follow, ring the bell. Share, do all the things to support this show and support the elders and the gurus doing the work out there. And next time we'll have more content to blow your mind. See you next time.